fun program with Pastor Scotty. That's going to be a really great time. Ephesians chapter 4 in your Bible with me. Last week, you'll recall that I spoke about sins against edification. I'm going to do the same thing tonight, but a more practical bent. Last time we went through Romans chapter 14, almost verse by verse, teaching our approach to people with whom we have a disagreement. It is interesting, though, when we talk about edification, we're talking about individual Christians building one another up in their faith. Recently, Vice President Mike Pence spoke at Liberty University, and he made the remark that Christians are going to face more challenges against their faith in the coming days than we have at any other time in at least our nation's history. I think that that is true because the cultural tide, though the political tide tends to be conservative today, the cultural tide is still trending, as we all know, in a very wrong direction. And the political correctness of the age and the censure of Christian people is becoming something that is really systemic in our American culture and in society. So Vice President Mike Pence, he spoke on that at Liberty University. Then here a couple days ago, how many saw that he was speaking here in Indiana at Taylor University? Did you say that? See that? Taylor University. I have a couple things to say about that. This has nothing to do with them. It kind of does have to do with the message, but Mike Pence is a Christian, okay? He is a born-again, clear-cut, clear Christian testimony, cleaner than a hound's tooth, okay? You could not ask for more in a vice president. We have not had more in the way of character and in the way of genuine Christianity anywhere near the vice presidency in many, many years. He is definitely a good Christian. So he spoke at Taylor University, a Christian university. Now, I'm going to be the first person to say I don't know very little about Taylor University. I know very little. The press was reporting, and so you kind of have to take this at a not face value. The press was reporting that when Mr. Pence stood to speak, that several faculty members and a number of students rose in protest and left the speech of Mr. Pence. Now, I'm going to make a statement about that. That was rude. It was rude. Now, this is supposed to be a Christian university, and for faculty members to behave in such a rude and untoward fashion toward a dignity, one of our nationally elected leaders, for them to behave that way set a horrible example to the students. I would say that those faculty members are both spiritually immature and immature as individuals, because to make a protest like that is borderline barbarism. Now, I'm going to say something. I have sat through several lectures where I completely disagreed with the speaker. I didn't get up and leave. I listened to what he had to say. There is benefit for me to listen from time to time to people who do not agree with me so that I can gain their perspective and I can be more precise in my own beliefs. But secondly, this, there is simply a line of decorum that should be observed in our culture. And it is very problematic to me when so-called Christian university professors decide to act like leftist yahoos and get up and march out in some kind of silly protest. They have taught young people then that they are to be intolerant. Now, this is what this teaches. Let's talk about what this teaches. It teaches young people that they are to be intolerant of the opinions of others. Now, wait a minute. Pastor Monty, that's what the far right does. No, I don't see the far right supposed to do that. It's the left that usually does that. But here we have Christian professors, supposedly, I don't know, Christian professors who essentially said that if someone else has a differing opinion, they're not going to even bother listening to it. Ladies and gentlemen, that is part of the problem in this country. That is part of the problem. Now, if I were the president of Taylor University, I would fire everyone who walked out. I can understand kids, okay, because they're immature, they're intellectually immature, they're spiritually immature. I can kind of understand that. I can kind of understand where they've been rubbed the wrong way by their culture and by the outrage of our culture. I cannot understand adults who hold degrees and teaching positions in a Christian, so-called Christian university. I cannot understand how adults could walk out and make a public display and make a public scene when our vice president is speaking, and they would receive absolutely no censure, no punishment for doing so. All they have done is taught bad behavior, and I think it's horrible. And so now I get into my message. My message really does fit the topic. Because in essence, if Vice President Mike Pence is correct, and I think that he probably is, We will, in a coming point of time, face more difficulty as Christians than we ever have to function as Christians in our culture. That is going to mean that we are going to need one another more than we ever have. We said last week that there's no such thing as a free-range, lone ranger type of Christian. There really isn't. We need one another. Believers need one another. We need to fellowship with one another. We need to know one another. We need to have that base of support with one another. Someone said, Pastor, there's strength in numbers. I'm not so much worried about strength in numbers as I'm worried about the building up that we can do of one another in our faith because we believe the same things. But one of the things that Paul warns about over and over again in the New Testament epistles is the potential for people who are together, let's say in a local church, for this being our setting tonight, for people who are together to rub one another the wrong way. That is entirely possible. And so in Ephesians chapter 4, look at verse 29. Paul says this, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." So corrupt communication, that which undermines edification, is not to proceed out of our mouths. But edification, that is to build up our speech, our communication, should by pattern communicate grace to the hearers. I love what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 14:12. He said, "Seek that ye may exalt to the edifying of the church." And in 1 Corinthians 12, he was dealing with spiritual gifts. And some of you maybe have taken a spiritual gift analysis, a test for your spiritual gift. I did a long time ago. I have the gift of mercy. I like having the gift of mercy, by the way. I think it's a good gift to have. I have the gift of mercy. And maybe there's a couple other gifts thrown in there too. Some people have analyzed themselves and taken that little test. I don't know how accurate the test is, but you maybe have taken that little test. But Paul says this, of all the gifts that you can have, he said, seek to excel in edifying one another. In other words, building one another up. One of the purposes we said last week in coming to church is not to tear down, but to build up. Now, I want to think about this message, though, outside, both inside the church and outside the bounds of the church. Because today, there has never been more opportunity to edify than at any other time in history. Pastor, what are you talking about? We have all of the social networking and media platforms. We have texting. We have phone conversation. All of these things that we can do to build up. But the same things that can be used to build up, unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but perhaps more often, are used to tear down. An old preacher I knew years ago used to say this all the time. He said, "Be kind to everyone because everyone is having a hard day." I think that's a good thought to put in your mind. Be kind to everyone because everyone is having a hard day. In the book of James chapter 3, it is the classic warning chapter concerning the mouth. And James describes the tongue as a source both of sweet water and bitter. And the entire theme of James chapter 3 is this, to be careful to refrain our speech so that rather than do harm, we are a blessing. And the mouth is capable both of great harm and of great blessing. And so when we talk about edification, we're talking about our communication. Today, this message applies not only to what you say to people. You say, "Well, Pastor Bonnie, you know, this message doesn't really apply to me because when I come to church, I put a big smile on my face. I hold my Bible up on my chest and I'm just kind to everybody." Okay, I'm glad you do that. It has to be more than just in the church. Today, I want to challenge you, congregation, about this in relation not only to church, how we communicate here, but social media. Social media. It's something how the best of Christians can become a kind of a mean and critical demon behind the keyboard. Psychologists are actually performing studies as to why people who are normally nice people take it out on everyone with their computer keyboard. Why it seems like there's such a difference. For some people, there really is a difference. And Paul says, regardless of whether it's in the church house or whether it's in public somewhere, whether it's a friend over coffee, whether it's on social media, whatever it is, that edification of believers is to be our key. In other words, quit being snarky. That just summed up my whole message. You can go home now. No, just kidding. Quit being snarky. Now, last week I went through Romans chapter 14. But I promised you this. Tonight I would do some practical points. What I'm giving you comes from over 30 years of pastoral ministry. What each one of these points, by the way, with each of these points, I had an individual and a situation in mind. I'm not naming any of them, okay? But I'm saying that to you so you'll pay attention through the whole sermon. Because you're going to be wondering who that could be, and then you're going to apply names to it. I know you. I know how you are. So let's look at this. How do I refrain? And I'm not talking about now right now positive ways to build up, because there are many ways to do that. We should hit that later maybe sometime. But what are some of the things, practically speaking, that I should not do in my communication, whether it be in the church or whether it be on social media? Number one, I'll give them to you. Number one, do not add unnecessary pressure to the lives of others. Do not add unnecessary pressure to the lives of others. When I come to build someone up, I am not coming to dump something additional on their lives. There are in lives people who are takers and people who are givers. Takers will tend to add unnecessary pressure to another individual in order to get something from that person. In other words, if I need something, I would do well to think before I ask. I know some people who are very busy. I'm a very busy person. I know some people who are very busy. It's a funny thing. The more busy an individual is, the more other people ask of them. And sometimes it's hilarious what they ask, because the answer is readily available. Now, I am 52 years old. Look at me, congregation. I'm 52 years old. And I'm still getting used to this. But do you know what? The answer is found. Does everybody hear that? That's rain, everyone. Pause for just a moment and listen. The rain. It raineth on the just, and also on the unjust fellow, but chiefly on the just, because the unjust stole the just's umbrella. Isn't that beautiful? I will recite more poetry later on, maybe a separate service from this, but that's the rain you're hearing. When we add unnecessary pressure, sometimes we can find answers for ourselves. Now listen carefully. This generation, and I have to get used to using this generation has more answers at its fingertips than any generation ever had. You say, Pastor, what are you talking about? I'm talking about YouTube University. Before I pressure someone else about a how-to, I am learning to go online and ask Google or YouTube how to. We bought a Frigidaire refrigerator a couple years ago when we were remodeling the kitchen. We bought all Frigidaire appliances. I don't like Frigidaire appliances. This is a first world problem, but I don't like it. The ice maker has, we've had the repairman out to work on the ice maker at least 5 times. It freezes. You're nodding, Doug. Do you have one of these? How old is this refrigerator? And does your ice maker freeze up, Doug? Okay, so listen carefully. I'm going to give you answers tonight. See, some people come to church and you get things. You get things when you come. So I thought, well, I'm not going to, you know, we had repairman came and it would work for a tiny little while and then it would freeze up again. So then I went on YouTube and looked on YouTube and it said how you can disassemble the entire interior of the ice maker and then you can melt it all. And when you melt it, it'll all go away and it'll work again until it stops working again. That was the basic answer. Well, I thought to myself, self, there's got to be a better way. So you know what I did? I went and got Kelly's hair dryer. I did not disassemble the ice cube maker. I pulled the tray out. And then I took the hair dryer at full blast and I sprayed hot air into that chamber and the ice that was back in the mechanism, it just melted like snow under the hot sun. This worked so well that I made a video of myself doing this, okay? Okay, and you can look up Repair Ice Maker Frigidaire on YouTube, and I have a video, and by the way, many good comments under my video. I have a video sharing how to make it work, and it worked for about 3 months. And then it did the same thing. Doug, there's a kit that you need to have someone install. It's a kit that will fix the problem. After we finally got that installed, the kit fixed the problem. But here's what I'm saying. I don't want to add, that was just humorous. I'm not desiring to add undue pressure to the life of another person. I'm not building them up. Sometimes I'm burdening them down. I need to learn how to do things myself. I don't want to expect others to fulfill my dreams, my ideas, even my burden or my vision, because that's not building up. That's laying upon somebody else more for them to do. I don't know anyone in this room that needs more to do. So number one, do not add unnecessary pressure to the lives of others. Number two, oh, I love this. Number two, do not dramatize issues. Do not dramatize issues. Issues arise among people, but we should refrain from making everything a big deal. Don't amplify the drama of other people, nor broadcast their sins or shortcomings. Look at me, everyone. Everything is not an emergency. If everything's an emergency, nothing is an emergency. Everything, this offended somebody when I said it a while back, so I think I'll say it again. Everything is not a tragedy, okay? Now, we have a prayer list, and we send out prayer requests from the church. But can I tell you something about this? The prayer list becomes white noise if we send out prayer requests, how do I say this? That aren't really important? Pastor Monty. No, frankly, there are some things that aren't that important. If I get a prayer request from the church and it says, pray for my Aunt Nelda's cousin's second brother's best friend. He stubbed his toe. No. Pastor, are you not going to pray? No. Why would I? It's not that. No, it's to the guy who stubbed his toe. But he can pray. It's not that important. Now, I will pray for the big one. I'm being honest with you. Can't somebody just be honest? Pastor Waddy, I'm so spiritual that the moment that prayer request comes across my computer screen, I fall to my knees in earnest pleading for the big toe. No, you don't. Now you're lying. And that's even worse. People love to make a little thing into a big thing. And that what that kind of drama does is it consumes other people, and it doesn't build us up. We can become consumed with that. And oftentimes people get burdened down heavily. Big things are important, and we should pray about big things and support each other through big things. But when there's something very, very small, to bring it to the height of drama is to really cause people to not be edified any longer. We don't amplify these things. Number three, here's a good one. I want to edify people. Number three, don't let unresolved offenses simmer. Don't let unresolved offenses simmer. Now, Pastor Monty, what should I do? Number one, try to forgive. I believe for the Christian that forgiveness should be as automatic as breathing. Now, sometimes it's not. I have a sermon online somewhere called The Hard Work of Forgiveness. Sometimes in very serious matters, forgiveness is something that you struggle with for a long time. Sometimes forgiveness is something that you find yourself having to grant over and over again because the seeds of bitterness come to your soul. I understand that. But in many, many things, we can try to forgive automatically and go forward without a confrontation. There are some things, however, that cannot be adequately settled without confrontation, and so I would recommend that you gently confront any more serious matter with the goal of restoration. Listen to what I'm going to say. With the goal of restoration, not humiliation. Do you hear what I said? That there's a, well, Pastor Monty, so-and-so offended me, and I am going to dress him down, and I'm going to give him a piece of my mind, and when I'm done, there'll be nothing left of him. Okay. You're not a very good Christian, because the Bible never says that we confront people with an air of destroying them. We confront with the hope of restoration. I also understand, by the way, that in some circumstances, restoration is neither wise nor possible. I understand that. If you want to talk to me about that later, I'll be happy to talk about that later. I understand that. But in many cases, I'm talking about these personal offenses that take place, a restoration can be handled very, very simply. If we confront someone, listen carefully, if we confront someone with the goal of humiliating that individual, we will likely lose both the relationship and potentially any level of respect that that person has left to us. Okay, psychologists tell us this. There are two things that people fear the most. Two things. One of them should be obvious. Does anyone have a guess? Death. Who said death? Death, right over here. Death. Absolutely, death. That's the number one thing people fear. Number one thing. Here's the hard question. What is the number two thing that people fear? Someone said speaking in public. Was that you, Kurt? Said, yeah. Okay, I don't understand why people fear speaking in public. This is fun. Well, you say, but Pastor Monty, you know, I don't want to get up front of everybody because they're going to analyze every move I make. They're going to hang on every word I say, and they're all going to criticize. No, they're not. They're not even listening. The entire audience is paying zero attention. Do you know how hard I have to work to even direct your eyes up here off the cell phone? Do you have any idea? I mean, nobody's... No, and nobody remembers anything anyway, no matter what I say. That's why I have to constantly tiptoe right to the edge of outrageous just to get somebody to listen and to get someone to remember. But you're close. Here's the second one. The second thing that people fear the most is humiliation. So if that's the second great fear, second only to death, and then I engage in humiliating another person, I have wounded that person very, very deeply. I have not helped the problem. I have hindered and hurt the problem. And it certainly is a huge detour, huge roadblock to any kind of edification. And by the way, if I'm going to speak to someone about an unresolved offense, one of the things I need to do first is this: examine my own life. Remember what Jesus said about that? He said, before you go to your brother to take the mote, the little piece of dust out of his eye, you better check your own eye because you could have a huge beam coming out your eye. Years ago, someone had to go to the hospital. They were sick for a few days, and Sunday school classes here at the church put together meals for folks in Sunday school class or whatever that need a couple meals for a period of time for their recuperation. And this individual rarely came to church Sunday morning, didn't attend Sunday school, and was very sloppy in Sunday morning attendance. A couple months after this illness had passed, the person was talking to me and called on the phone. Said, "Preacher, I'm really mad at the church." Okay, what? Now, by the way, that means, "Preacher, I'm really mad at you." Okay, what happened? I'm thinking my mind is racing. Something horrible happened at the church. She said, "Nobody brought me a meal when I was sick." What? Hey, look at me. Are you 2 years old? Have you ever heard of DoorDash, where you call people and they bring you food? It's very popular today. Hey, by the way, if you don't like that idea, what about the Schwann Man? How many know about the Schwann Man? The Schwann Man will drive you crazy. He will come to your door. He will burden you down with food. And by the way, it's all wonderful, delicious. He'll burden you down. There's options, but she was so upset. And so she went through the church didn't do this. I listened carefully. And then I said, called her by name, and I said, "So, did you know Mrs. So-and-so was in the hospital 2 months ago?" "I don't even know who that is." I said, "Oh, you don't? It was announced in church." I said, "How many meals did you bring her? In fact, how many meals have you ever brought anyone?" "Whoa." Well, you say, "Pastor Bonnie, there, what happened?" Well, there was silence, and I've never seen that lady back in this church. there was just dead silence on the phone. Now, here's what she was doing. She was picking out a mote, but she didn't see the beam. Okay, if you're offended with someone, be very careful that you think first about your own life. Let me give you another one, number four. Oh, I like this one. Number four, we're going to edify people, so we're restraining our speech. Number four, don't express needless criticism. Now, constructive criticism is very helpful to me as a pastor, okay? And when someone approaches me in a way that is constructive, I listen and I consider what I can do. Maybe there's a blind spot. Maybe I don't see something that somebody else sees. Constructive criticism is very helpful, but expressing needless criticism is not. A question to ask yourself is this, and I've asked myself this numerous times, do I really need to have an opinion? Pastor Monty, I've got opinions about everything. You're a lot of fun at a dinner party. Opinions on everything. Do you really need to have an opinion? And then this, do you really need to express it? Okay. Only express needful criticism to those, by the way, who can fix the problem. Pastor Monty, we're having an issue with so-and-so, and I've talked to 10 other people, and they feel the same way. Look at me. They didn't until you talked to them. It never occurred to them one time. And what you were not looking for a second opinion. You were trying to build a team. You were trying to build a coalition. Whenever we do that, that is not edifying and building up the body of Christ. That becomes divisive in the body of Christ. When we do that on social media, it becomes equally as divisive among Christian people that we know in the social media world. I should only express a needful criticism to the individual who has the authority or the ability to fix the problem. If I'm seeking a second opinion, I'm just trying to build a team of disgruntled people. By the way, here's a good one, folks. This is good. And most of you don't do this, but it's still good. Do you know the one area where people criticize one another that is the most hurtful and ignorant? Listen to what I'm about to say. In how other people rear their children. Now, I've been a pastor for 30 years. Nothing can become more controversial. A young couple has this precious little bundle of joy. It's their first one, so they buy every possible baby book. They adopt a particular baby philosophy, and this first child is regimented like some kind of a soldier. By the way, the second child doesn't get this treatment. And the third child almost feels abandoned and homeless. But that first child, we're gonna fix, this kid's gonna be a genius, this kid's gonna be an athlete, this kid's going to be talented, he's going to be a singer, and he's gonna play 10 musical instruments, and we're gonna raise our kid according to this philosophy. And so then they start in with all this idealistic high hopes. They see another family in the church. Man, they don't make their kids do anything. I heard that their kids watched 7 minutes of TV last week, and that's 7 minutes too much. And then parents attack one another or go behind their back and criticize, and it's divisive. Can I tell you something I've learned in 30 years as a pastor? Look at me, congregation. God, in his wisdom, gave their child to them. Well, but Pastor Monty, they're not doing a thing right. Okay. It is none of your business. Let's say that together, congregation. Those are beautiful words. The words none of your business. Let's say it together. None of your business. But Pastor Monty, I just want to help. No, you don't. No, you really don't. Let's say those words again. None of your business, okay? How individuals function, and I think this does apply very directly to Romans chapter 14, how individuals function with regard to the latitude of Christian practice in child rearing. I had a lady one time say this. This just all comes to my mind. I was talking about something in a public setting. A lady was seated in the class, and she raised her hand, and she said, Pastor Monty, I believe that it is the will of God for all parents to homeschool their children. What? Now, Kelly and I, we tried homeschooling. We did. Our kids were actually, the way we homeschooled, it was if we were training them for management positions at Walmart. They went to Walmart every day, and they knew where everything was up and down every aisle. They really did. But it was a hard trial. The oldest son was easy to deal with. The youngest son, not so much. Kelly, this is, Pastor Monty, did you have one of those beautiful homeschool Duggar experiences? No, I came home one day and Kelly was crying and she said she hates her youngest son. I mean, it was not exactly what you'd call a TV moment, okay, for homeschooling. It wasn't like this at all. And this it was horrible. We sent them back to school. By the way, the Bible says this, the Apostle Paul said in the book of Galatians that children are to be under tutors and governors until the time appointed. And so that is a secondary interpretation, as tacit approval of sending your kids off to school if that's what you feel the Lord would have you to do. But this lady declared in front of all these people, she said, "It is the will of God for everyone to homeschool." No, it's not. Do you know why? I know that. Do you know why? Can I tell you why? Don't tell anyone, okay? Here's why. Because some people, I'm talking about parents now, some parents are too dumb to homeschool their kids. I'm just being honest with you. In my experience of 30 years as a pastor, and we have some great homeschool families in this congregation, great homeschool families, but in my 30 years as a pastor, there are people that are either really, 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 really good at it, or there are people that are really, 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 really bad at it. And every individual parent makes that choice prayerfully under the leadership of the Lord. And if the Lord has led you a particular direction, it does not mean he leads everyone the same direction. We don't want to express needless criticism. Number five, quickly, I've got a moment. Don't make people feel bad. Don't make people feel bad. Preacher, what are you talking about? We're talking about edification. You know what we don't need? We don't need needless put-downs or cutting someone down to size or catty remarks or passive-aggressive insults. That happens. By the way, that happens a lot online. My favorite catty remark is this. Somebody comes to church and they've got a new shirt, or let's say a lady has a new dress on, and she's just pleased as punch because she has a new dress on. And one of the snide ladies comes up to her in church. She says, "That's a really pretty dress. Do they make it in your size?" That's horrible. Kurt, you like that. That's horrible. And I know most of us don't say anything so outrageous as that, but to be honest, sometimes we come kind of with a chip on our shoulder or ready to knock the chip off of someone else's shoulder. Don't make people feel bad needlessly. Even in joking, and I love to kid. You know I love to kid and joke around. You know that? But I have had to apologize to people in the past for hurting their feelings or something, or saying something I shouldn't have said. We want to be careful about that. Don't seek to make people feel bad. Let me give you another one. Oh, how about this? Don't purposely expose others to your offensive behaviors. Now, this really applies to social media. Don't purposely expose others to your offensive behaviors or, quote-unquote, your liberties, okay? Facebook is a war zone for this. Now, I like to say this every once in a while, congregation, okay? Pastor Monty, you won't believe what I saw on Facebook, and I'm going to take a screenshot and send it to you. Don't do that. You know why? I'm not on Facebook because I don't want to know. Pastor, that sounds like you're putting your head in the sand. I really am. Do you know why? Ignorance is bliss, okay? The whole reason I don't want to be exposed to that stuff is I don't want to know. The second reason is this. I am the pastor of Faith Baptist Church, not the chaplain of Facebook, okay? Offenses that take place online should be handled between the individuals who have the offense online. But we don't want to purposely expose others to offensive behavior, to our liberties. This is so true of young people today. This really bothers me. Can I pontificate for a moment? Young people now on social media will take their liberties or sometimes their overt sins, and they will throw them up in their parents' faces publicly because they know their parents are looking, and they'll throw them up in the face of all the church members because they know that people are looking, and they purposely expose people to offensive behavior in an attempt to shock or in an attempt to declare their independence. Do you know what? Do you know what independence is? Independence is not getting on Facebook with some outrageous activity and slamming it in everybody's face. Do you know what independence is, young people? It's paying your own bills. It's moving out of your parents' house. It's supporting yourself and acting like an adult and conducting yourself as an adult. Well, Pastor Monty, I have no intention of living under the strict rules and standards of my parents. Okay, fine. No one said you have to. You're independent. You're out of the house. But why? Why? Why Would you hurt their feelings by posting all of that? Well, I just want everybody to see how foolish I am. By the way, including employers. And I've had several employers who have called me because people ask me to give references. And they've called me and they've said something like this, Pastor, can you give a reference for so-and-so? Yes, I'll be happy. What do you want to discuss? They'll talk about the person for a little bit. Then they'll say, hey, let me talk to you about this. They'll say, we saw something disturbing on Facebook. I've had several employers calling me saying, and Pastor, could you talk about this? Because we saw that so-and-so was involved in this on Facebook and it's disturbing. And I'll say, I probably don't know anything about it. But I'll say, yes, that is disturbing. Understand what you post online could be there for a very, very, very long time. And there could be consequences. What I do not understand, though, is purposely offending someone else's sincerely held beliefs and standards. I don't understand that. Well, Pastor Bonnie, you know, that narrow-minded Baptist fundamentalist church I grew up in, it was just too much. How is it too much? By the way, 99% of our young people who've been involved in our youth groups have had the time of their lives. I've had young people now, adults, parents, and they sit in this church every Sunday, who've come up to me and say the best times of my life were in senior high in that youth group, some of the best times I ever enjoyed in my life. And they'll talk to me about things like that. It's wonderful to know that's true. But, well, Pastor Monty, I just don't believe that way anymore. Okay, let's say you don't. But why do you have to pretend you didn't have a good time? And didn't the church just protect you from things? Wasn't that about it? Well, those rules were too... What rules? We had some rules, but nothing that was over the top. Here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. There is no reason to purposely offend people if you have changed your position on something. Here's how I like to put it. This is controversial whenever I tell people to do this. Smoke behind the barn. Ha! Okay. If smoking is a taboo for you, then don't put it on Facebook that you're smoking. Why can't you smoke behind the barn? How many old people know what I'm talking about? You know, when you were kids, if you were going to try smoking, you found some old uncle that laid his Marlboro cigarettes around. You stole a few. You spent money. How do you know all this? You don't need to know that. Gossips. You stole a few, and what did you do? You didn't march into the living room. You didn't do that. Do you know why you didn't do that? How many know why you didn't do that? Because Dad give you a whooping if you did that. So you know what you did? You said to your brother, hey, look what I got. I got three of these. Hey, let's go outside. And what did you do? You went behind the barn because you didn't want anyone to know. Now, look at me. If you're going to take a different position from your parents, you do not have to throw that position in their faces and needlessly hurt and offend them. I don't understand that. This generation that feels like it has to declare its independence from every level of sanity by advertising the craziest things that they do and putting it out there for all the world to see, they don't understand sometimes how much they hurt a parent. Let me say this. They don't understand sometimes how much they hurt a preacher. Now, I'm the consummate optimist. You know why? Because I've got a God in heaven who's in more control than I am. But sometimes it does hurt the parents or the preacher's feelings or a school teacher, a Christian school teacher, whatever it may be. Sometimes it hurts their feelings. Do you know how you edify? You edify by only presenting those things that do not offend. And these are good steps in the right direction. And may I say this? If we practice this as Americans, I'm not even talking now about Christians. If we practice this as Americans, our national discourse would be 10,000 times healthier than it is today. And I don't know how it is that we've cast away every sense of decency and decorum and every sense of politeness, and we've almost gotten at each other's necks. And while that is very true out in the world, it is becoming increasingly true in the church because people are used to doing all of those things on social media. I'll give you one story and I'm done. Years ago, I was on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter anymore. I have an account there, but I don't use it. It's all locked down. I'm not interested in using it. But I was on Twitter. There was a fellow with whom I disagreed over theological issues. He lives in Ireland. He's an Irish evangelist for the Free Presbyterian Church. We differed over theological issues, and so we'd banter back and forth. And we both had an audience. I had several thousand followers, friends, whatever they are, people, peeps. I had several, because it's Twitter, you got peeps. I had several thousand of those, and he had his group. And so we'd go back and forth. In one particular exchange one evening, when I was just bored and arguing with him, he got a little sharp. He got a little personal. And so I sent him a private message, and I said, hey, we both have an audience here, but we're both Christians. We're both born again. I said, let's be careful how we talk to one another. Now, by the way, those of you who have followed my Twitter account in the past know that there were some times when I broke this rule. How many know that? Yeah, because I just could dress somebody down like nobody's business, but it wasn't even Christian, but I did it anyway, like everybody else. And so I sent him this message. And he sent me back. He said, yes. He said, you're right. He said, let's conduct our discussions more carefully. And so we agreed. Well, then we started to talk to each other privately. And then we started this communication. And all of a sudden, we discovered we had an awful lot in common. Not that theological issue, but we had a lot of other things in common. Then all of a sudden, we discovered we had mutual friends. People in the United States that he was friends with, people that I'm friends with and see on a regular basis several times a year. And then we discovered all these similarities, and he is a soul winner, and he's an evangelist, and all these different things, and he's over in Ireland. And then one day, and we kind of started a little friendship. And then one day, he sent me a letter. He said this, and I could just imagine it in his Irish accent. He said, Monty, I've been listening to your preaching. He said, for an independent Baptist, you're right tolerable to listen to. I loved it. And, you know, he and I, there's nothing bad between us. And you know, do you know what? Here's the point. Here's the point I'm going to make, okay? Why make an enemy where you could find a friend? Isn't that a good thought? You ought to write that one down. Why make an enemy where you could find a friend? And that's why Paul said in 1 Corinthians 14, he said this. He said, excel to edifying. So you want to get really, really good at something? Get good at building up the people of God. Father, thank you for your word tonight and for multiple exhortations to edify. And yet, Father, sometimes our temptation is to do exactly the opposite. Sometimes we do it inadvertently. Probably most of us, looking at our own patterns of speech and habit, would say, yes, I didn't mean to do that, or it was certainly inadvertent. But Lord, help us to be more alert to that, because the pressure will be on Christians. We need one another more than ever. We need to set aside petty squabbling and unite in our love for each other. And we need to guard our tongues. Lord, you've given us a great power in the tongue, but it's a great power for good or for evil. And Father, we need the help of the Holy Spirit. Bless, I pray, this thought. Make us people who support and help and love one another through good times, through bad, in difficulty and in ease. Make us people who know how to edify with the words that we speak. In Jesus' name. Let's stand together, please. We'll stand together.